The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
In screaming woods, in empty rooms, or gloomy vaults and sunken tombs, where monks and nuns in dust decay and shadows dance at close of day, where the bat dips on wing and special choirs on breezes sing, where swords of ancient battles clash and shimmering shades of freedom dash, where raging storms at midnight howl and distant rolls of thunder growl, where the hounds of hell take flight and ghost clouds race across the night, where silver webs of spiders weave and star-crossed lovers take their leave, where curses lay the spirits low and mortal footsteps fear to go, where death holds life in grim embrace, its lines etched on the sinner's face, wherever the march of time is flaunted, voices cry,
"This place is haunted! Get out!"
Brought to you by WKTV, I'm Wayne Thomas. Welcome to another Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. On this show, we require certain criteria, and that would be spooky, weird, or strange. Or else, if you're an author or you have a paranormal team. So, please meet my co-host, and she can tell you which of that criteria she's...
Okay, well, all the above. Oh, I'm Kim Colleen. I'm a normal co-host of the Grand Rapids Paranormal Podcast, Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, and thanks for having me tonight again, Wayne.
Oh, yeah. We Brandon got the short straw.
Oh, that's right. So yeah, poor Brandon.
Brandon Jose can be on this show, too, as a regular host. Guest host, but tonight we have the Reverend Robert Duchesne and Nicole Duchesne, husband and wife. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's an interesting dynamic you have going here, husband and wife. I'm wondering how that's worked out through the years.
Oh. Depends on the year.
Yeah. Good or bad. Yeah.
So give us some basics. I know you guys have been around. You're actually legends in this area. I wanted you on the show last year when I was first looking for guests. I was about ready to stand on the streets of Grand Rapids by the library and wait for you to walk by with one of your tours.
Yeah.
So, it would have worked.
Yes.
Yeah. So talk about that. I think that's what you're really into is the tours right now.
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, due to COVID, it's abbreviated tours this year. So it's just taking place during this month. We have three Grand Rapids tours. The Grand Rapids tour is on Halloween.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Yes. We decided Grand Rapids was going to have Devil's Night and Halloween for a
tour.
I love
it.
Yes. And then there's two tours in Kalamazoo. So we're starting the tours this coming Saturday on the 17th. And then we're running them out on the weekends for the rest of the month.
Okay. So how many tours per day do you do then?
It starts out being scheduled as one tour, but if we sell out, then we'll add extras as needed.
Okay.
Because we're able to do the tour the Grand Rapids tour, we do sections for each guide. And the Kalamazoo tour, if we needed to, either one of us could do that tour on our own.
Okay.
So we can set it up so we have a tour every hour if needed.
Okay. Yeah, so we know, everybody knows the whole tour. So that way, if we have to stagger it, we can.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
like we were just talking on the way here, I do believe it was the 24th. There is a large group that wants to come. And
can't
there's
remember
only...
if that's a Kalamazoo tour or Grand Rapids tour, but we'll be adding another tour for the 24th. I know that.
Okay. We'll probably do it to where he starts at 8 and I'll start the next one at 9.
So if you're listening and if you're seeing this and you feel like it's already sold out, don't be dismayed because you can have the possibility of opening up another tour.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
and what you're talking about specifically is this is your book, Ghosts of Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And the tour pretty much talks about some of the buildings and the locations directed from this book in particular. And so what are some of the more popular places that you go on the tour? What do you show people?
I think the one that surprises people the most is one of my last stops on the tour route, which is actually talking about the Children's Museum being haunted.
Okay.
And it's not actually tied to where people would assume it is. It's from another part of the building because they were built in blocks, so it looks like it's a separate building, but the death occurred in another portion of the building. The basements were connected, and the spirit seems to have gravitated over towards a children's museum. And it's probably partially due to the fact that, unfortunately, it was a 14-year-old boy.
Oh.
So I'm figuring I'm a lot older than 14, but if I were to die and someone brought in a bunch of toys and I hadn't the opportunity to try to play with them, it's probably better than hanging out in a restaurant.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, that's probably where he's sticking out, is right there. Mm-hmm. One thing about the buildings downtown that you talked about, how they're all connected. And so a ghost, like you say, can be actually originated in one part, and he doesn't care whether he's wandering through walls into another section at all. But you guys are authors for sure. I have two of your books here. And I believe you also have a Lansing book, right?
Paranormal Lansing, Michigan's Haunted Nightlife. We have a true crime book called One Silent Voice, a Jeannie Singleton story. And we will be updating and reposting, is it Twisted? Is that what we went with? Twisted History of Kalamazoo?
Yes.
It had another name originally, so I got confused for a minute there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's what we like to use this platform, is for to promote people authors. And you guys have got, like I say, a few books out there. But you also had a team, and I don't know if you're still doing that.
We are somewhat active. I think I get out more often than most of the team does, because I now work on negative haunting cases, like where people feel that they might have something negative, like a demon or something similar to that.
Oh, that sounds that's familiar,
my specialty
right,
right there.
That's what this guy does.
Yeah, Rob, that's exactly what I do.
Yeah.
I was guessing with the hat and with all the crucifix.
Right, and smudging is kind of a pagan. It's definitely a pagan ritual, but I smudge, but I call on Jesus at the end.
I definitely don't smudge, but I will call on Jesus all the time. So I guess it works out.
And I work with a minister, a preacher man.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And on the other team that I was on, we also had, I saw the need to have a minister on the team. You know, my grandfather he ministered his own church. He was a ghost hunter. He coached me from around age 5. So there was that interesting thing.
You have like 10 years of coaching then, right?
10 years. I'm at least that old.
At least 15.
Right. And then my brother also is a minister. So when I decided that I was going to get into ghost hunting, he gave me warnings, and he was like, I'm not even sure if ghosts exist. And he came back a couple days later and goes, well, it's in the Bible, so I guess ghosts do exist.
I just had that same discussion with someone on a podcast earlier this week about the fact that ghosts are mentioned in the Bible. So
that's interesting how you can work that out, you know, because I have ran into church members who are telling me, you know, anything on the other side, it's probably something bad, mm-hmm. because people aren't supposed to come back.
Right.
So I'm interested to hear your views on that, how you work that out, being a reverend and also being a ghost hunter.
I actually worked with the priest out of Kalamazoo, who was the one that trained me what to do, and his definition of what he thought the earthbound spirits were, is his theory was that it was purgatory spirits, and that they haven't yet passed into heaven. So they're in, like, pretty much in purgatory, mm-hmm. between the realms, not being able to pass on yet. That was also the thing I was told by Kenneth Deal, who was a Catholic demonologist. He is also one of my mentors. He had the same theory on it, is that they were purgatory spirits.
So they haven't necessarily got to the other side and then came back.
Right. They're pretty much in the waiting room trying to get over to the other side.
Why would they be in the waiting room in the first place?
Under the Catholic faith, there's purgatory. It depends on how long you have to atone for your sins before you're allowed to get in.
Okay.
So it's pretty much would be like, I think everyone has to sit in the waiting room. It's like you're hanging out at the DMV or something. I don't know.
Okay.
That's
so
not
if you're
probably
a really
the right
bad
definition.
Person when you were alive, you
you're
might
sit
be there for
a while.
You could be there for quite a while, yes.
Hmm.
And it seems like people that we run into are ghosts or spirits, entities, whatever you want to call it. A lot of them have been there for a long time. They show up in period clothing.
Right. Yeah. Victorian, Civil War.
I always tell everyone, I make a joke on our tour, because on our tour, a lot of the people that we talk about are still stuck at their works after they were dead. So I always joke with everyone that they better make sure they love their job, because they're probably going to be going back to it for 150 years after they die.
Yeah, good point. It seems like routine things can be imprinted, whether it's in the fabric of the building. Now, do you believe in residual and intelligent hauntings?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
So residual being, that's where it's absorbed their energy. It's not necessarily a spirit connected to it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then intelligent is going to interact with you.
Right.
And
there
is a spirit attached to
that. When I used to have our radio show on our digital broadcasting network, we interviewed a parapsychologist who did an experiment with residual hauntings. And he went into buildings that had residual hauntings with degaussing equipment that used to be used to erase, like, videotapes or audio tapes. And he put a lot of them together and turned them on for, like, 30 minutes in a room, and then researched whether or not the activity stopped. And he said in about 95% of the cases, that completely eliminated the residual hauntings.
That was in your book.
Was it?
Yeah, I remember you reading something.
It could have been.
I remember reading something about a study, right? Where
that might have been the Phillips experiment. I know that's in the book, and that was a group from Mensa that got together and created a spirit on their own, pretty much willed it into existence by concentrating and trying to contact a spirit that they made up. That was a Mensa experiment, I believe, in the 1960s. I'm not exactly sure on the year on that one, though.
Yeah, I guess that would be kind of like the Tulpa, where the mind is so powerful it can actually create an entity. Mm-hmm. Or these people show up out there at Hell's Bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, Brandon and I went out to Hell's Bridge, I don't know, this summer. I remember it being hot, humid.
Yeah, yucky. They got up from one of the podcasts and went with the guest.
Yeah, we had one of our guests who wanted to go out there, and so Brandon and I accompanied him out there, and I really didn't feel any Tulpa situation out there. I didn't feel anything, you know, but there was other people out there that we talked to that said, yes, we've experienced things here lots of times, you know, and it's one of those instances. Yeah, there's a story behind it, but nobody has been able to prove that story to be true.
Correct.
Pretty much been proven to be untrue.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Yes. But still,
they uncovered some things that other people hadn't, because they dug in. Share those with us, please, the insights from Hell's Bridge.
Yeah, I'd love to hear
more
that.
Your research. So
there we go.
Yes, the whole legend of Hell's Bridge, for anybody who's not familiar, there is supposed to be Elias Frisk, who had kidnapped and murdered a bunch of children, and they said drowned them in this area where Hell's Bridge is now. I actually contacted the Algoma Township Historical Society, and it just so happens that the lady who runs it, her name is Julie, and Julie is married into the Frisk family.
Yeah, I think that's in your book.
Yes.
I read that story in your book here, and I'm like, well, that's pretty lucky that you actually talked to somebody with the same last name, but then she told you some valuable information.
Oh, absolutely. There has never been an Elias Frisk.
Exactly.
Another part of the legend, he was supposed to be a preacher. They never had a preacher in their ancestry. The Frisk family is getting kind of tired of having their name associated with
it. Sure.
Oh, yes. So, but through the research and through Julie actually clued me in on a couple of these things. The legend might not be true, but that doesn't mean anything when it comes to the paranormal activity that's in that area, because from what I found out, you take that spot and you go out about a mile diameter and you find a lot of interesting things, including way back in the logging era, the men kept seeing this creature, and everybody nicknamed it the Hodag. So they would see this creature that was out there, and it kept scaring the loggers in that area. And that's actually talked about in the book of the history of Algoma Township.
Okay.
And Julie said that they've talked about it for centuries, creature.
I guess they had a contest with the local children to draw a picture of the Hodag, and they have the framed winner and up on the wall there in the Historic Society.
No way.
Oh, yeah, that picture's in your book. Yeah,
yes,
that picture's in your
children.
Book. That doesn't look like a picture that a child did to me.
Right. No, that was a child. They
had
the local
cool
children
picture.
Do that. It was a good picture.
Yes.
But there is other things. There's like an unusually high amount of suicides and violent deaths within that mile radius. So you have this cryptozoology, you know, this creature,
yep,
that was seen throughout that area. You have a high amount of deaths within a mile area of,
yep,
that.
Yep.
So
it's all that residual energy,
yes,
that is surrounded that area. And so what you're dealing with here is some of that going on, and then, mm-hmm, people crowding that area, you know,
doing, yep, seances, right, yep,
doing all sorts paranormal of things out there. And like, it's almost like adding fuel to the fire.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was interesting visiting that bridge. And, mm-hmm, I think you've got a picture in your book of Hell's Bridge,
right.
I think.
Yes.
And when I was there, it has gone downhill
lot.
Like,
really?
When you, with the picture of Hell's Bridge in your book, it, mm-hmm, doesn't look anything like that anymore.
Really? Yeah,
I
haven't.
Well, that would be 11 years ago, I believe.
Oh, God, yeah.
Book,
that
so.
It is barely hanging
there
on by a thread.
Oh, no.
Did you get on it?
Like, no, Ben did.
I know Ben Goldman. He was.
Ben Goldman. I don't know if you know him.
Yes.
So,
oh, do you?
Yeah.
We,
oh,
went,
cool,
out there with Ben and a part of his crew, and we were like, Ben, don't go out there, because this thing is like teetering on falling, mm-hmm, into the river, right?
It wasn't all that sturdy back then.
So, and, yeah. It's completely unsturdy now.
Oh, wow.
And he was hell-bent on getting across that bridge, man, you know.
Oh, yeah. We did, too. We crossed the bridge and went off into the woods. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
I think the bridge
stuff
was the only thing that scared you out there, wasn't it?
Oh, I am horribly afraid of heights, to the point where I can get maybe on like the second run of a ladder and that's it. And then
there was no ladder.
Freeze. No, but I mean, that's,
oh, right,
how
she
high
doesn't want to be off the ground.
Oh,
so I crossed it, but man, I was terrified the entire time.
Well, I mean, it's literally like this, man. I,
yeah,
mean,
now I
wouldn't
can
even bother.
No, I wouldn't even bother with it.
No,
now.
You had to be like, you know, circus act,
yes,
to try and get across that thing,
yes,
now. So
yeah, it's been years since we've had the opportunity to go,
yeah,
back there.
I knew Kim had been out there, so I knew she'd be able to relate to that. I've actually been to probably 10 locations that you guys have in these books. One of the closest ones is the 36th Street Lounge, Old Lenny's.
Yes.
And I'm at the 34 block, so I'm only a couple
blocks
from there.
Oh, you're almost right there.
Right?
Yeah.
And I drove down there because I wanted to ask them, mm-hmm, if they knew they were haunted. And it's all boarded up, so I didn't get to talk to you.
I had heard that they closed, and that, you know, and what's a shame about that, it's not only was it a haunted location, man, they had good food.
They had the
was
biggest.
Was that Sanchez? Was that called Sanchez?
No, Sanchez is downtown.
That was different. Okay.
Lenny's.
Oh, Lenny's.
Lenny's. The Lenny's burrito was like,
okay,
mammoth.
Oh, that's, yeah, what I heard. I never had the burrito,
oh,
but I had the chicken Alfredo. And I'm like, oh, my God. They had,
okay,
like
off
the
subject
best. Yes.
We're all hungry.
My buddies, a couple of farm boys, I'd go with them, and they had no problem polishing off one of those Lenny's,
yep,
burritos. But at the time, didn't have any,
yeah,
idea it was haunted.
And they were great folks, too, because I said like one sentence to the waitress, and she's like, oh yeah, this place is haunted,
yeah,
we'll tell you all about it, we'll, mm-hmm, take you down in the basement where we see everything,
mm-hmm.
And
I was hoping that was going to happen when I showed,
oh,
up there.
Oh shoot.
Yes.
I know.
And it probably would have if they were open, because,
yeah,
I mean, they were very open about talking about what was happening there,
and that's not always the case,
right, yeah,
right.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. So I'm wondering how much frustration you guys may have ran into along the way, because you have a long history,
mm-hmm,
of this. What was your original team's name? And then, yeah, then how much frustration or obstacles have you ran into?
I'm going to start that one with Rob, because his team was older.
Yeah, I started out in 1993. Our original team's name was K Kalamazoo Ghost Hunting Club. You know, we wanted to be a pretty original name there. And we stuck with that until 2003 when we incorporated as W Paranormal Incorporated and started doing our radio show at that point. And then when we started doing the book series, which is, we call the Paranormal Michigan Book Series, we changed the company name to Paranormal Michigan Incorporated. Mm-hmm. And pretty much merged with her team.
Yeah, I started my team in October of 1999, and it was West Michigan Ghost Hunter Society.
Okay.
And it was just myself and my best friend Vicky at the time, and big, you know, we loved the paranormal, but we will admit we were chickens. We, you know, the first official ghost hunt took place in the Township Cemetery in Grand Haven, and we lasted like 20 minutes.
Why? Because you saw something, heard something?
No, we both felt something at the exact same time.
Oh,
we were, yeah, we were probably about 10 feet apart, and we're just walking through with and taking pictures. That's all we had was cameras. And we're walking through, and all of a sudden it just got like ice cold, and you just felt like you weren't wanted, and somebody was right there. And even though we didn't talk or anything, we just looked at each other. She looked at me, I looked at her, and we took off for the car. And even though we were 10 feet apart, we both felt the same thing at the exact same time.
Do you feel like you have any special abilities?
That's about it. I talk sometimes about seeing if I could, you know, if I can train myself for more. My sensitivity is just basically, oh, okay, something's not right in this room.
Sure.
I can feel something in this room, but that's it. But I've never really took it farther to the point of, you know, was it male? Was it female?
Yeah.
You know, is it a child? Is it a grown up?
Yeah.
It was
Wayne
always
and I
just,
have,
yeah.
Talked to a lot of people that can actually hone in on if it's a female or male. And then we've also interviewed quite a few people who are empaths.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that they can feel the emotion of,
right,
you know, the spirit, and kind of take that in themselves and relay that.
I think it's a matter of getting used to trusting that gut feeling.
Yeah, it sounds you've got a little bit of that.
A little bit, and you
I
know,
I think we all do.
Yes,
yeah,
we all do.
I think pretty much
do.
Everyone in the paranormal field has some sort of a feeling of what's around him.
Sure.
Mean, she never told me about getting scared and having to leave on that first investigation.
Oh yeah. I'm not
probably
gonna,
thought
I wasn't
I was gonna
admit that to another
teaser.
Probably figured
are
I
you
would tease her about
yeah,
it. But,
yeah.
Yeah, he will now.
My best
yeah.
friend, Bob, well, not really. My best friend Bob and I were out with our team back in probably like early 2000s. And we went out to a church that they had been working on out by Constantine. And when they were doing the renovations, they had found that there had been two bodies that had been buried in the floor.
Oh my.
It ended up that they were actually former priests from the church, but you know how people get the rumors out?
Yep.
Everyone said it was Al Capone had dumped bodies in there.
Right.
So,
Al Capone's been all over.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he was actually in that area. But,
oh, okay.
But so we went out there to try to do an EVP session in this church, wanting to see if we can get a hold of Al Capone's victims. And we don't really know what we came across in the church, but there were three of us. We all had our recorders down separately. We have our red flashlights in the room looking all around to see if we see anything. And we never said anything to each other. All three of us at the same time picked up our recorders and took off running to the car. And when we reviewed the EVP, I was playing it back in the car to Bob. And I'm like, Bob, you have to listen to this. And I played it and he goes, dude, you faked that. And I'm like, no.
Faked it.
And so I play it back again, and he's like, dude, that has to be faked. And I'm like, no. And what we actually captured was after we're running and we get to the car and you can hear we're out of breath, there's this voice that says, in a like very whispery voice, it says, stay out with those beautiful colored lights.
Oh. That's a long sentence for a ghost.
Yeah.
So we thought that was quite interesting. And ended up giving that, there was a radio show, I don't know if it's still on anymore, called Haunted Voices Radio. It had Todd Bates.
He's bringing it back.
Who's one of the leading experts on EVP. He was actually training me on EVP work. And I gave him that file and he's like, dude, it's got to be one of the best ones I've ever heard.
Wow.
he was the one that actually figured out that that part at the end said beautiful colored lights. We only thought it said stay out, and then it was like pretty soft sound after that. Mm-hmm. But he cleared it up, and that's where we found out that it was actually longer than we had thought. But yeah, we thought it said stay out, but it was stay out with those beautiful colored lights. Wow. And I thought that was interesting since we've been carrying red flashlights.
I was wondering what this what they meant about that.
Yeah, we were carrying the red flashlights because it doesn't affect your night vision as much as regular flashlights do.
Okay.
So. What a great story.
Wow.
Yeah. Clergymen and adolescents, they say, see more ghosts than other people. So you guys got a very interesting dynamic working.
I'm an
you.
Adolescent clergyman, so that works out.
I'm still in mind, right?
I concur.
Yeah, right.
I'm definitely an adolescent.
Yeah, us men, we don't really grow up. We just get, we do get older, but we don't grow up.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Nikki, I knew you as a different name, though.
Okay.
As Bray, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was Nicole Bray.
Yes.
And so when I was messaging with Rob, I'm going, what is your name? Are you guys married? Because you weren't always married.
Oh, no. Started out, when I started team, it was Nicole Bray. And it was Nicole Bray for the longest time. And then we had a mutual friend, Doug, who actually was Ghostly Talk. Mm-hmm. The first, internet-based radio ghost show. And he said, well, we've got this historic octagon house in Washington, Michigan. And I would love for your team to come on over and do like this joint investigation with a bunch of us. Well, we all thought that we were just meeting up with Scott and Doug from the show. And actually, it was also Rob and members of his team. So that's where we met. So we met on an investigation.
I believe that was when I was on my way to Gettysburg.
Right before you went to Gettysburg with them.
With Ghostly Talk.
So yeah.
You ran into two members of my team that were going to Gettysburg with their team.
And we just got back from Gettysburg.
And I absolutely could not stand her. And I thought she was the most stuck-up person.
Oh, no. He did. He did. Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad I asked this question.
Yes. I hated my husband too.
Oh, jeez.
I was like,
I couldn't stand
him. I kept asking Doug, I'm like, does she think she's better than everyone?
Oh, no.
So funny.
Yes. That's funny.
And then I think it was like 4 or 5 months later, there was this mutual person that we knew, and we got to chatting, online. We got to chatting about this person, and
sparks flew.
I guess.
Yeah. I guess.
So yeah. What happens when you get an IRC? You never know what's going to happen.
What's an IRC?
It's a really old way of communicating. Internet relay chat. It existed mainly for programmers to talk to each other.
Okay.
And now it's more or less exists so people can
a little bit
music,
before Yahoo Messenger,
It was actually at the same time.
Yeah.
It was out about the. It was. They were both popular around the same time.
Yeah. So.
So do you think Grand Rapids is haunted?
Oh, Lord,
or
yes.
Or cursed.
Yeah.
Cursed. Like your book says.
Cursed. Possibly even cursed. Yes, because the Indians believed that the Grand River area, that just happens to be where Grand Rapids
is. And they would build these
cursed
mounds.
The mound builders were here first.
Before.
The mound builders were the first ones here.
Okay.
They were annihilated, and nobody knows for sure exactly what tribe it's believed. It's the Sioux Indians.
That's right. You it's in the book.
Yeah, but nobody knows exactly for sure. No.
Okay. Well, yeah, they died out.
I know when we were in St. Louis, they had in their museum in St. Louis, they mentioned the mound builders. And the museum in St. Louis says that most of the groups of the mound builders were killed by Sioux Indians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we make it highly likely that that was the case. And according to the research they had there at the St. Louis Library, they felt that if you died doing an act of violence, you were damned. So if they were attacked, they would not defend themselves.
Oh, so that's why potentially they died out. Mm-hmm. But then those mounds are still here today, right? In Grand Rapids.
There's many of them. Yes.
Yeah. So if you know what you're looking for, that dates back all the way to those mound builders.
There's a very prominent one in Bronson Park in Kalamazoo, too.
Okay.
Yep.
That's interesting when I read that in your
book.
And
right by the Gerald R. Ford Museum.
There's one there, too.
Yeah, in your book, you said that the Native American Indians called Grand Rapids the Haunted Valley of the Grand.
Mm-hmm.
So that weren't sure whether evil spirits were haunted. They had entire Indian hunting parties that disappeared.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yep. And then there was, you know, on top of all of that, when the white man came, mm-hmm. and then throughout the years when we really started developing Grand Rapids, I mean, for major industry, we're talking like 1870s
yep.
to the 1900s. Then we did them a horrible dishonor on top of it because we desecrated a lot of their Indian burial grounds.
Yeah.
One in particular along the Thornapple River is there was a burial ground, Indian burial ground, and then Grand Rapids went through their smallpox epidemic. Well, what they decided is they were going to build what's called pest houses or pest barns, and that's where they took everybody who was a victim of smallpox and they would take them to this barn to be treated because they couldn't have them, you know, in this house and that house and this house and that house because it would spread. So they would take them all to these barns.
Okay.
Well, they decided to build the barn on top of the Indian burial ground.
Oh, jeez.
And then anybody who died, they took them out to the property and buried them in a mass grave. So we had an investigation one time, my team did, where it was this machine shop. And when we went to do the history, that machine shop is sitting smack dab on top of all of that. The Indian burial ground, the smallpox, mass
hundreds,
graves. And
hundreds of
them.
People underneath that.
Yes.
Wow. So, and that's different than the poor houses, right?
The poor houses were developed after the Civil War.
Okay.
Yes.
Because similar situation, I mean, they would take the mentally ill, right?
The mentally ill, the poor, I mean, anybody you can think of that would be, quote unquote, the outcast of society. I mean, there was even girls that got pregnant.
Right.
You know, which think about how horrible of a scandal that was back then.
Right.
And they would be able to stay there and they'd give birth and sometimes they'd leave it to children. Sometimes they died. Sometimes they left the child there and the child ends up growing up on these county poor farms.
And so then what you're left with are these cemeteries with unmarked graves.
Tons of unmarked
graves. But then you can see, you know, where these burial plots are laid out because sometimes the sod will sink in?
Everything would sink in, yeah. Grand Rapids has one of the worst ones where I've seen where you can still tell where some of these old graves were.
Right.
Because back then, I mean, the law of a cement vault that the coffins go in, that is relatively modern.
I mean,
that was only adopted maybe like 40 years ago. Back then, it was sometimes they didn't even get a coffin. They were wrapped and thrown in the ground.
Right.
And so you have nothing there for erosion to stop.
Yeah.
And
so you can actually, I forget the name of the cemetery that you mentioned in your book where a lot of these poorhouse people have been buried.
Maple Grove.
That's it. Maple Grove.
Maple Grove. And you go in the front, the lucky ones got stones.
Okay.
The lucky ones. Usually that means there was a family member,
exactly,
a friend, somebody who was willing to purchase that. For a while, the county would purchase little stones too, but they only did that for a short period of time.
Yeah.
Any county poor farm cemetery, there's going to be a distinct lack of burials from the 20s because they would take those people, they wouldn't be buried, they'd be donated to the University of Michigan to use as cadavers.
That's right. I read that
so
in your book
for
too.
The 20s, there's a huge missing.
And they didn't have a say whether their bodies got donated to science. It was just like, you died. Okay, we need some bodies. We ship them off.
You died. There's no family who's claiming you. Nothing. Boom. You go.
Yep. And then you were discarded as medical waste.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I found out through genealogy, I have a third great grand uncle that actually died in Eloise, which was the Wayne County Poor Farm.
Sure.
And the year that he died, I'm not sure if it was the poor farm time or when they changed it over to an asylum.
That's right, because
it could have been either one.
Sure.
Because it was right during that time. So I don't know if it was because he was poverty stricken and he had no one else, or if it was he was a inmate of the asylum.
Mm-hmm. Well, this just reinforces the importance of that ceremony that surrounds death and the respect that we need to put on death like that. And in Grand Rapids, I think we built the S-curves right over Indian.
They did. They found graves. Right? Yeah, they found markers.
You talk about Heritage Hills in Grand Rapids.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been to, that's one of the places that I've been to, investigated. Mm-hmm. And a couple of the places I went to were so similar. They were talking like minions were after them. So I don't know if they were shapeshifters, Native American shapeshifters, or what they were, but they are all the same story. They're a couple blocks apart right up there in that area, the Black Hills of Grand Rapids, that area too.
Yep.
Yeah, I love the work that you do, and you're digging in deep to this stuff. I think you also investigated the Ada Witch and uncovered some things that hadn't been revealed in some of these other books that I read.
Right.
I think we spent way too much time down there looking up the death records.
Oh my God, that took hours.
Well, the basis of the legend of the Ada Witch is supposed to be that there was a woman who was having an affair.
Right.
And her husband went out hunting, and she snuck her lover in, and they were out in the woods having a tryst. And the husband came across them in the woods, and a fight ensued, and as a result, all three of them died of their injuries.
Yep.
That's the legend. They had narrowed it down saying that it was some, I won't say who, somebody narrowed it down saying who they thought the Ada Witch was. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they started breaking up her tombstone, selling it on eBay. They were selling dirt from her grave on eBay. And so we decided we were going to go find out for sure if that was who could possibly be the Ada Witch. And that was probably the shortest part of it, because we found her death certificate. And I cannot remember. Typhoid? Is that what she died
of?
Yeah. Yeah, she died of typhoid. So there was no way that she fit that description of having been murdered while having an affair with somebody out in the woods. So we sat and went through every book they have of deaths down there, looking for three people to die a violent death within like 2 or 3 weeks, because we figured they could have suffered for a little while. And we found absolutely no death records that can match that happening. So unless one of them was never reported, which then it never would have made.
Actually, all three would have to have never been reported.
It's another Hell's Bridge.
Oh, absolutely.
Is what it is.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely.
And I feel bad for that woman's grave that was literally picked apart.
It was. And
ended up working with ZZM?
Yeah, Brent
Channel
Ashcroft.
13, Brent Ashcroft.
Really?
And we, while working with him, contacted several different monument companies, and Lowell Granite Company actually donated a new tombstone for her.
That's amazing.
He was at Nick Fink's with us, him and his partner.
Really?
Nice looking blonde.
Yeah.
Can't remember her name, but yeah.
I had not heard that her tombstone was...
She's got a new tombstone.
New one. Okay.
And...
He put it in like 5 feet of concrete so no one could ever take it out again.
Yeah, so it's only sitting like maybe a foot high, and it's one of those more flat ones.
Yeah.
But he wanted to make sure that nobody could take it again.
Yeah.
So
well, everybody knows the name.
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to say the name because I know it, you know it. We don't need more people out there. But
there's 5 feet of concrete that's actually attached to that.
Okay.
And he wanted to make sure nothing happened to that again.
And they made sure that the new marker says died of typhoid.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
So that they would no longer associate it with being the Ada Witch, because you go there and you have that story and you can see that she died of a natural disease.
Right. Yep.
We don't get these details in any of these other books that I've read.
Because these are the people that get to the root of it.
Oh, yeah. They dig deep. I believe you also dug deep on what you call the legend of the wooden leg murder.
Oh,
that was
I like that title.
Yes.
Okay, is that a true story or not a true story?
It's partially true.
Okay, I can't tell anymore.
All right. What the legend is Warren and Virginia Randall, they came here to Grand Rapids. Warren had a wooden leg.
Yep.
And they had this big fight. They were going to get divorced. And
he thought she was cheating all the time.
All the time. And he convinced her to come back to the house.
Yep.
Because they were separated. And he beat her to death with his wooden leg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he committed suicide.
He tried slitting his own throat.
Oh, yeah, with a straight razor. Yeah. And then turned the gas on and then stuffed every single hole mm-hmm. where gas could leak out. I mean, to the point where they found pieces of newspaper in keyholes. He was that meticulous about making sure the gas never escaped the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the legend is that he beat his wife to death with his wooden leg.
And unfortunately, that probably comes from the news story that came out that very next day.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying that essentially one of the reporters had asked what had happened, and they said it looks like he beat his wife with his leg.
Yeah. Back then, reporters were... Well,
they could just walk into the crime
pretty
scene.
Pretty sensational headline, though.
Yes, and they could just walk right into the crime scene and start asking questions sure. of the police officers. Obviously, now you can't do that. Well, one of the officers made some comment because his wooden leg was detached and there was blood all over the place that he beat her with the wooden leg. Oh. And that is what the reporter published.
Gotcha.
And that's where the legend got started.
And you need to say, too, what building that happened in.
Yes.
Because that is a prominent building, right?
Downtown. It's the former Michigan Bell building.
Right, which is now the...
AT&T building.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And what was there was the Judd White Mansion. And that's the house that they were renting out when all this occurred. For the longest time, and I'm talking decades, mm-hmm. people kept trying to find the real story behind this. And we couldn't. I tried for years, couldn't find anything. So many teams tried. We had reporters, Fox 17 tried to dig into it.
Wow.
ZZM tried to dig into it because they wanted to do a story on it.
Sure.
And then they're like, well, we can't find anything. It was mentioned in the book, Haunted Houses of Grand Rapids, the first original book that not before Gary Eberle took over. The first original one. Yes, Gary Eberle actually was given the rights to the first book. And that's where people learned about the whole legend with the Michigan Bell Building and mm-hmm. Warren and Virginia mm-hmm. Randall. And so nobody could find anything. All we had was this chapter in a book. Well, one day when we decided we were going to do Ghosts of Grand Rapids book, you know, I'm doing research, you know, and when I do research, like for old newspaper articles, I just don't type in like a certain date or, I mean, I do that, certain mm-hmm, names, certain mm-hmm. dates, but sometimes I'll just come up with the quirkiest things. Like for our true crime book, Janie Singleton, I put in mysteries or unsolved mm-hmm, mysteries mm-hmm. into the Kalamazoo. We're at the Kalamazoo Library, and boom, the 30th anniversary of her death popped up. And that's how we found it. And so I'm sitting here and I'm getting tired. And I'm like, okay, I'm about ready to call it quits. So I went, wooden leg murder. There it was.
How did you think of that?
Just putting in something weird. And I'll do that all the time. I'll just put in something weird and you'd be surprised what
I get to pop up.
So I ended up finding the actual true story in the newspaper, and they had the names wrong.
He changed
many
the names,
of the details were
the
wrong in the story.
Yes.
So did this actually happen?
This actually happened. Okay. The names are Warren and Vashti Rowland.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And he had a different year. It actually happened in 1909. He did have a wooden leg. He did work for the railroad. He got his ankle caught under a moving train. So he had to have his leg amputated from the knee down.
So what does that have to do with the suicide pact?
Well, it actually turns out that there, according to the article, there really wasn't a suicide pact, especially if once you look at the autopsy report.
Okay.
Actual cause of death for Vashti was acute alcohol poisoning.
Oh.
And that appears that he woke up, they'd both passed out, he woke up, found she was dead, and then he committed suicide.
He didn't want to live without her. They had a very strong love-hate relationship. Okay. Incredibly strong, to where I actually found a newspaper article references to where the neighbors would comment, oh yeah, Vashti's running down the street chasing Warren with a knife again and stuff like that. Yeah, they had an extreme love-hate relationship. And so it's believed that when he woke up, found her deceased, he just could not live without her. Because no matter how much they love and hated each other, they couldn't live without each other.
But then the hauntings continued after their death, right?
Oh, still continues to this day.
Up until the point where that house was being rented out to other individuals, correct?
It was rented for a short time and then stayed vacant for a long time.
Somebody had died. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, like, it caught on fire.
Then it caught on fire.
Yeah.
Eventually, even back in the early 1900s, people already started labeling that house as cursed and haunted.
Yeah.
Because of all that. So eventually it was torn down.
Yep.
And it was purchased for commercial property, and that's where the Michigan Bell building
Well, I've been down there.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It's like a fortress. You can't get in there.
No, no. No.
And I've called, and I said... And they said, no, we get calls and we're not letting you in.
Yep.
I was thinking about like disguising myself as a maintenance person.
Oh, geez.
Have you watched too many spy shows?
I know. I would probably be your one phone call.
I wanted to sneak in there.
Jeez, get me out of jail.
I don't recommend that. Always get permission if you can.
Exactly.
Oh, my Lord, yes. Always.
The Grand Rapids is full of history. We haven't hit on it all because I have these pictures hanging here, and I was turning the pages, and I came to page 66, and I go, wait a minute. I know that gal.
What?
Mina Decker. The Mina Decker story.
Yes.
And you guys, this is where I talk about these buildings all being, like, pretty much one building, and they're all connected. McFadden's in Ritz County, which she was more of the Ritz County.
Yeah, it's now Luna's. For anybody who lives in Grand, it's now Luna's.
Okay.
Mexican
and they're not
restaurant.
Interested in the paranormal. But when I was there, the guy had seen ghosts at Ritz County. So he was all for it. And so we were able to get in there. We actually were in there on the anniversary of her being bludgeoned to death. And so she was a young typist. It was it's one of the Michigan's oldest unsolved murders. And then McFadden's, right? All connected, they have their own stories.
Yeah, all three of those buildings right there used to be hotels, three different hotels, and they each had its own stories about what happened. There were suicides. I uncovered, you know, multiple suicides that took place in all three. Mina Decker, who was murdered on the third floor, and there was it was called the Crathmore, which is the more modern building. When you go down, you can see the two historical buildings, and then you see the more modern. You know, that eventually was torn down. Now you have your modern building. But it used to be the Crathmore Hotel. And there was this young Polish girl that was brought here to the United States by this gentleman with the promise of marriage. And she gets here, and he puts her in the Crathmore Hotel, and lo and behold, he marries somebody else. She commits suicide by jumping from the top of the stairwell straight down. You go over to McFadden's area, which was first started out as a Waldron Hotel, and then it was a Wellington Hotel. And there was many suicides by poisoning that happened when it was over there. There was also to be known that the top floor was used as a brothel.
Ah.
And one of the prostitutes fell in love with one of her clients, and he refused to leave his wife for her, so she hung herself. Yep. I mean, all three of those, it just ties together. Every single one of those
I think doing
tragedy.
Research, we've only, I think doing research, whenever we do hotels, I think we've only come across one hotel ever that we're doing research on that did not have a death.
Yeah.
And that was only it was in Kalamazoo, and it was like a 6-bedroom boarding house.
Teeny little boarding house.
And that was the only one that I think we've ever found that did not have some sort of a violent death or a suicide in it.
Sheesh.
Because Nikki also said a key word, and that's brothels, because that tortured life led to ghosts.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of hauntings.
A lot of buildings I've investigated have been brothels. Yep. So that does definitely seem to be another one.
Yeah.
The hotels, the brothels. And back in turn of the, like the 1900s, late 1800s, if anyone committed suicide, they typically didn't do it at home. They would go to a hotel and commit suicide so mm-hmm. that their family didn't have to deal with cleaning up the mess or seeing the body.
Yeah, nice, there's a 50-year span starting in about 1880 to about the 1920-ish into the 30s, where I joke, you know, it's not a joking matter, but I kind of joke at the on the tour that I don't know if that turned into like the popular thing to do. But if you were not going to commit suicide at your house or like on your property, you know, in the barn or whatever, it just seemed like a popular thing to do. You go to a hotel.
You know, I know in our Kalamazoo tour, there were we have what at least two of them where people got pretty much got off the train, got a hotel, and killed themselves.
Yeah, just went straight to the hotel to go kill themselves. Grand Rapids is the same thing. There was many of them, which. In the former Morton House Hotel. Lots of them. You know, and after we write the book, that doesn't mean research stops.
Sure.
But even after we created our tour scripts, the research doesn't stop. I'm now up to 23 suicides in the Morton House Hotel.
Oh, wow.
During the hotel days. Either the hotel or when it was low-income apartments.
Some of the places I hadn't been to, but McFadden's has the gargoyles up on top of
yes,
it.
So it's one of those are so cool.
Yeah, they're so cool. And you talk about tunnels in Grand Rapids and what they were used
with
for.
Them.
And in the basement of Ritz County, there's like, I thought they used it for coal. For like coal, because and it seemed like everybody was connected with this tunnel. Mm-hmm. But you talked about it being electricity, steam, telegram.
A lot of Grand Rapids was heated by steam, so they didn't have to have so many furnaces running all the time. So they had steam tunnels down there.
Oh,
as well.
Grand Rapids is filled with tunnels.
So I thought the murderer could have escaped through those tunnels. They say he went out the back.
Definitely
they
could
figured
have.
He went out the back right. door because somebody on another floor heard. That door being open, it's the back receiving goods
Well, there's
store.
A picture in the book. You have an actual picture.
Yeah, I went around and back and took a picture
of the door.
Right.
If you know look at that, it shows the actual door that apparently that the murderer.
That's
escaped
where they believe
out of.
The murderer escaped out of.
Right.
Because somebody heard that door. You know, based upon when she was killed, and when somebody heard the elevator going down and then the door opening, that they figured that's where the murder escaped from.
And a lot of those tunnels are interconnected to the hotels, right?
Oh, yeah. Morton House Hotel has a tunnel underneath, and that connected over towards what's now Amway Grand Plaza.
Right.
St. Cecilia has one of those tunnels. The only difference with them is it was connected to the church across the street, but they put a manhole right there in the middle, and so a wall went down.
Okay.
So yeah, and we've been in the tunnels under St. Cecilia. Yeah. And so Grand Rapids has tons and tons of tunnels.
Nobody would ever know that.
Yeah. St. Cecilia's always been really nice.
Yeah, I've been to St. Cecilia's, and I knew about the tunnels. We didn't get to go in there. We were there for the world's largest ghost hunt.
Oh.
About 2 years ago or so. But this story had Darren, he's with Problem Solvers now, Cunningham. So he was there with Channel Fox 17. So, and we were there on the anniversary of her being bludgeoned. So it just happened to work out that way. But that's pretty much Grand Rapids covered. We're not going to get into Kalamazoo.
No.
You guys are going to have to be back here.
Oh, I already told them they have to come back.
I know.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
and you don't even have to like wait on our tour route and ask us. Now you have our contact information.
I like that part of it. Right. I was ready to because Brandon, who's not here tonight, he was on one of your. He went on the Grand Rapids tour, but I know Kalamazoo has just as much. Detailed, I think. You guys dug out the truth, and that's what I really like about the way you guys did it. And also in the Kalamazoo book, the Reverend had a cryptozoology experience where he saw a dog man.
What?
Yep. We talked about the Michigan dog man thing in there, and I actually talked with it's mentioned in, is it in Weird Michigan or is it Strange Michigan?
Strange Michigan. Strange Linda Michigan. Godfrey.
Linda Godfrey, I kind of like the way she wrote it up. She said that I called her office to tell her about the story. I was actually interviewing her for my radio show. So I did technically call her office, but it was to talk to her about Michigan Dogman. And she's got into explaining what the Michigan Dogman was. And it was at that point that I put two and two together because my best friend and I, Bob and I always said that we saw the werewolf. That's what we always thought, that what we had seen, the best thing to describe it was a werewolf. And what we had come across is, we were out, we were like 18 years old. We're trying to find some abandoned structures to go into, call it ghost hunting, you know. It's not what you're supposed to do, but when you're 18, it's fun.
Yeah.
And we're driving around, and we're on one of the back roads out there, and I had a 1977 Lincoln Continental, big, huge boat,
right.
Almost impossible to turn that thing around anywhere. And we went past this dog that was eating roadkill on the side of the road. And my friend Bob, he's like, that dog looked kind of weird. And as we look at it, it actually gets up on its hind legs.
No.
Has that roadkill in its mouth, and it takes off running through the field. And as 18-year-old kids, we thought the bright idea was that we were going to hurry up and turn the car around, and we were going to go follow it. But luckily, the car was too big to turn around very fast, so we didn't manage to follow it, because I'm not exactly sure that would have been a great thing to do.
I thought you were going to say you ran after it on foot.
We were going to.
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah.
We were going to. And, I mean, I know when she started describing it, and I was like, you know what? We actually saw one of them, those dog men. And so that ended up getting mentioned in Strange Michigan. But I just found it kind of comical that it's like, he called my office to tell me about it. I'm like, not exactly, but. And then I don't remember where it was, but there was a report of a dogman den that had been found. And her and I went, like smart people that we are, we went out to go check out the den.
Of course you do. We were coming back from a vacation from the UP. When we got it, we're like, wait a minute, that's the next county. Let's go.
Yeah, so we got out to the supposed Michigan dogman den, and I can't tell you if there was a dogman in there, but there were a lot of bones, that's for sure.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah, something was eating.
Something was eating a lot of
things. Yeah.
Well, we pretty much ran out of time.
Oh, man.
I know. And we're going to skip a bunch of stuff on this show.
I know. I already warned them.
Because normally we do upcoming events.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Your tour is the big upcoming event.
The tours, yeah. The five that we get to do during the pandemic.
Any of them that get added, or any events that we do, we list on our website, which is paranormalmichigan.com. Mm-hmm. So we do tours there. Any of our speaking engagements are normally listed there. Unfortunately, I did not update it for this, so I need to be slapped or something.
Yeah.
But
another cool thing that we're going to be starting, Paranormal Michigan, we're starting a YouTube series. Where we are going to dig into and say, look, this legend isn't true. This is what we found out.
That's cool.
Here we go.
A lot of these ones that we're going to be covering, you can go online and you can find all kinds of people have been out there and just said the story over and over. They're like, well, this is a haunted road and this is why it's haunted.
Right.
And we're like,
yeah, that's what I'm used to.
Yeah. So, the first one is Hatchet Man Road.
So we're going to go, we're digging into the history of these things and whether or not what is supposed to have happened.
Yeah.
And if it did, why it might have created a haunting, or if it's another urban legend. So,
yep. So that one's
unfortunately, we're probably
going to
make a few
great.
People mad when we start debunking all their stories.
I like that you do. That
I'm
was
okay
refreshing.
I love it.
That was refreshing to that you guys actually dug deeper than all the stories that I've read so many other times. I know you mentioned this person.
Yes, Gary Eberle. Yeah, he teaches at Aquinas.
You might have worked with Tenney, maybe.
I know Tenney. Oh. Yeah, I've went to some of his lectures, and we were at the same conferences together.
He's actually my favorite lecturer. So.
Yeah, he's got the most interesting lecture of anybody.
Just
at those
to name drop a little, you worked with Kathleen Rydell Tetson on a case.
Yep. And we're not going to
get to talk about that too much, and we're not going to get to talk about Kalamazoo. So that's a great excuse to get back here as soon as you can.
Bet.
We're booking for next year already. Right. We're actually booked this year. Our big news is they're going to start showing our podcast on Comcast Channel 25 and UVerse Channel 99. So you guys will be on TV.
Yes.
After this, I know. That's exciting.
I've done that once or twice.
Yeah.
I figured. And we're not going to do a final thought because this is it. It's been a great show. Very informative. I like the way you guys dig out the facts. Reverend Robert Duchesne and Nicole Duchesne, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Love. Peace out, everybody.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.